Good morning. The Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection will come to order. It is Monday, March 10th. We are starting our 8:30 meeting at 10 to 9. But it is an unusual way to start the week for us here. Obviously, we have until 11 o'clock or just before because we have session. And we have two bills scheduled. The one, Senator Scogin, do you want to do that? It's shown number two here, but I think it will not take a lot of time. We're actually realizing right now that maybe this committee didn't need to have this bill, and it's going to go to Senator Metzen's committee, and I know he really wants a lot more bills. So, we're trying to accommodate Senator Metzen. Senator Scogin on Senate File 3158.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. Senate File 3158 is a Minnesota Vacation Rental Lodging Study. I spoke to several groups last year that are in the resort business, and at their statewide meeting that I attended, there was some concern that there are people who own private cabins on lakes that are renting them out now. And the resorters really did not have a problem with that, but they do want the playing field to be leveled, that they're being inspected, that they have smoke detectors, fire extinguishers, plumbing, and electrical is up to code. And they just felt that if these cabin owners are willing to rent them out, that they should be held to the same level of scrutiny. Ed Becker is with us. He's a resorter. He's in We Go Resort up on the Crow Wing chain. And also with us today is the director of Explore Minnesota, John Edmond. And I think I'll just have Ed speak to this issue a little bit, and we'll make this as quick as possible, Madam Chair.
Good morning. Welcome to our committee.
Yeah, I'm Ed Becker, in We Go Resort up by Nevis, Minnesota. I recognize a lot of faces around the table. Good morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the few minutes of time that you've allowed us to speak on this matter. I am a member of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and we have worked closely with Explore Minnesota Tourism on this issue a little bit in order to study the growing trend of private lake home rental without oversight and so forth, and what the impacts are to the state. And that's why we've asked Explore Minnesota Tourism to help us move this bill forward in order to get some information and just some basic information on what those impacts and issues are with private lake home study. And the study should provide us with some guidance on actually how prevalent it is. We know that in other states that it is very prevalent, and but in those states as well, they have some oversight within that, where currently we don't have any. We would like to help develop a definition of vacation rental lodging so that we can appropriate regulations and policies that apply to lodging facilities and will apply uniformly, which should put us all a little more on the same level playing field. Thank you for your time. I'd be willing to answer any questions.
Well, Mr. Becker, thank you for coming all the way here to talk to us this morning. You know, when I'm hearing about this issue, and I don't think that we'll probably give it prolonged debate in this committee, I know it will go to Senator Metzen's Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee on re-referral, but it's an issue in our community. I live in a suburb, and where people haven't been able to sell their homes, many times they're renting them out. And sometimes our city doesn't really know that. I think they've instituted a policy of people having to have a license to do that. I'm assuming that your licensure, whatever it is, you comes from the state of Minnesota, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, you know, it's my city that's monitoring rental housing, but it's really the same kind of issue.
Yes.
And a different, in a different...
kind of in a little different angle, yeah.
Right. So, I don't know, Senator Olson,
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd like to thank Senator Scogin for carrying this bill and for having someone from my district here to testify. That's great. This really is a big issue. And I would have to say, you know, for years and years, a lot of people own homes that they're only there in the summer up in my area, and then they go somewhere else, usually south, for the winter. And I don't think that's probably the concern of this bill, because often those people would find someone to stay in their home, you know, so it isn't vacant over the winter. Right, or just to have a little income coming from it. But small resorts have struggled to stay in business as property taxes and property values have risen so tremendously. And so there's had to be a lot of adjustment, and we've lost a lot of small resorts in Minnesota. And so as a result, because I think a lot of people can get quite a bit of money if they rent out their resort properties, even for 1 month out of the summer by the week, they can be making enough money to maybe pay their property taxes for the rest of the year or something. So it's become much more of a business and much more commonplace, I think, probably than it has been in the past. And also because it's very easy for them to advertise on the Internet compared to the money that would have been involved for a resort or the time it would have taken them to build a clientele. So I don't know what all the answers are, but I know that there is a lot of concern over this issue up in my district, and having a study to look at some possible approaches I would think would be a good idea.
So I'm glad that we have the bill in this committee, because Senator Olson's not on the committee where it's going. So I appreciate your input. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, thank you. This also reminded me of some legislation that's taking place in my city, in which they're not authorizing any more rentals anymore because we have so much student housing. And so what the concern that it raises, though, is what about the cabin owner who decides to rent to a neighbor or a friend or a relative for a month because they're going to go on a trip anyways, and this relative or neighbor would like to spend a month at the lake? Is that going to affect something like this, too?
Senator Scogin.
Senator Prettner-Solon, I think that's what the study's going to talk. They're going to talk to the people that do that and see how prevalent that is. And the reason we have John Edmund at the table today is because Explore Minnesota has indicated, and you will see there's no fiscal note attached, that they feel they can do this study internally and are willing to do that. So I think that's one of the questions that we're going to try to address.
Thank you.
So, and Mr. Edmund, did you wish to speak to this?
Certainly. Madam Chair, members, my name is John Edmund. I'm director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. And just very briefly, this issue has been addressed by many lodging associations throughout the state of Minnesota for the past several months, the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, the Minnesota Hospitality Minnesota, the Resort and Campground Association, et cetera. And there's been discussions even through our Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. At this point, we really have more questions than we have answers. It's a question about a level playing field, not trying to discourage them, because as director of tourism, in some ways, if that brings new people to the state, that's a good thing. But we just have to make sure that we're fair and balanced in how we're addressing that. And the one thing that I would like to point out is that this impacts more than just lake homes and resorts. There are many condominiums here in Minneapolis, St. Paul that are being rented as well, that people, non-residents, come and stay for a weekend as well. So it has a statewide impact. The other thing I'd like to add is that we were asked to look at this, and would be happy to, because we've been kind of addressing it through our public policy group anyway, and that there is no fiscal impact to do so. So we're happy to look at it, and right now we don't really have any answers, but we do know that there are a lot of questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, I think it's really good to anticipate. I mean, I think that obviously these rentals are happening already, but it could get to be much greater. And the fact that people are advertising in the Internet, people may be coming from out of state. Certainly they are. And I think that the public has an expectation that where they're coming, there will be appropriate safety and health requirements that are met. And if there isn't anything other than, and I don't even know if the building code necessarily was imposed, depending on the time of when these things were built. So I think that's a worthwhile study. So, Senator
Scogin. Madam Chair, I would recommend that Senate File 3158 be recommended to pass and referred to Senate Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee.
On Senator Scogin's motion that Senate File 3158 be recommended to pass and referred to the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is recommended to pass and referred to Business, Industry, and Jobs. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Edmund and Mr. Becker, thank you for coming. And now, we can actually adjourn.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, tell me I'm doing that, saying that right. There's coffee cake. That coffee cake. Looks good. Senator Anderson.
Thank you.
I didn't see you at first in the crowd of people that were up in front, but welcome again. And Professor Cox, good to see you this morning.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Yes.
And committee members, and thank you for making more time for us on Senate File 3396. We had a really good discussion about this bill on Friday, and I know most of the committee members were here, but a couple weren't. So I will, I know you've been adding lots of new committee times to your schedule. So just very briefly, I'll restate the purpose of this bill is to help us to get a handle on and provide some relief to the wave of mortgage foreclosures that is sweeping across our state and our country. We're expecting projected over 33,000 mortgage foreclosures across Minnesota in 2008, you know, a level of foreclosures that has not been seen since the Great Depression. And it's causing tremendous disruption and dislocation, not just to families affected and individuals, but to whole neighborhoods and cities and communities, as we have record numbers of vacant houses that become magnets for crime and vandalism and reduce property values, and really overall have a, with that number that we're talking about, it's having potentially you know, a system-wide or a economy-wide impact on housing prices, because property values are being driven lower and lower by this. And so it's a rather extraordinary measure that we think is designed to for a really extraordinary problem that we're facing right now. And the bill, just very briefly, Madam Chair, do you want me to just very briefly restate what the bill would do?
Senator Anderson, that's fine, yes.
Okay, very briefly, it would allow for anyone who obtained a mortgage between 2001 and 2007 that fit two criteria, either subprime under Minnesota's predatory lending law definition or a negative amortization loan, that they would be, if they're facing foreclosure after the effective date of this bill, they would have the right to ask for a deferment of that foreclosure for 1 year. During that one-year period, the lender would have to agree to not foreclose. At the same time, the borrower would have to agree to, number one, reside in that home for the entire period. It would have to be an owner-occupied home. Number two, to make regular monthly payments that would be based upon the original amount due at the original origination of the loan, or 65% of the amount at the time of default. And so there'd be a balance. There'd be a shared responsibility here. So the benefit to the lender is that they, instead of having a vacant house with nobody making payments, at least they'd be getting some payments. And the benefit to the homeowner, obviously, is that they have a year to try to work out a resolution to their financial crisis or to their loan that is just not sustainable for them. And in the meantime, we're really hoping that there will be aggressive action by Congress to try to find an overall systemic solution to this problem, because it is a critically important problem facing the whole nation right now. And so there's very serious solutions being contemplated in Congress. So that's the gist of the bill. There's some more details I can go into if members would like me to, or Madam Chair, if you would like me to.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you'll indulge me just to ask a few questions.
Of course.
Since I wasn't here on Friday. Senator Anderson, are these for people who've had ARM loans, whose rate of interest rate has increased and there's foreclosure? Is that...
Well, Madam, Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Prettner-Solon, very good question. The way that it's defined in the bill now is that it would be either a negative amortization loan, which is a loan where you actually pay less than the interest due, and so that you owe more every month rather than less. There were a number of those loans entered into during this time period between 2001 and 2007, but they are now illegal under Minnesota law. You couldn't do a new mortgage like that. The other big category would be anything that's considered subprime, which means that it's higher than the regular interest rate, whether it's an adjustable rate mortgage or a fixed rate mortgage. It would be that would depend how much higher than the regular interest rate it would have to be. So we have a definition in Minnesota law.
So,
and Senator Prettner-Solon.
Senator Anderson, so then you're saying that the responsibility on the part of the homeowner is to pay 65% of what they were paying or what they were paying before. I didn't understand which.
They would have to, Madam Chair,
Anderson.
Just for this 1 year period, it would be a breathing room for 1 year only. And during that period, they would have to pay either whatever the original amount was of the loan, the monthly payment. So that works for those loans that really went up dramatically and were ARMs or other kinds of mortgages that where the rates went up dramatically, the payment rates, or it would be based on 65% of the amount due monthly at the time of default. So you could look at either one, whichever was lower. That's what they would have to do. And one of the things, well, we had a number of technical issues that were raised by the banking community, and we do have an amendment that will clarify and fix a lot of those technical issues. And one of them is to clarify that that amount only includes the principal and interest, not taxes and insurance.
So, Senator Prettner-Solon.
So, thank you, Madam Chair. One last question then. So, what is the purpose? What will the 1 year buy? Will they be in the same situation a year from now, or what will happen?
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Prettner-Solon, as I said, it's a crisis of huge magnitude right now, and so what it will do at least for 1 year is to, we think, prevent about 15,000 homeowners across Minnesota from losing their homes in 2008. It doesn't solve the problem permanently. You're absolutely correct. But what it does is gives a year, number one, hopefully for some federal action to occur that gives permanent solutions. Number two, we heard testimony from some city officials on Friday who talked about, and from the banks as well, about their efforts to try to do outreach to people facing foreclosure and figure out if there's ways that their loans can be restructured, if they can get financial assistance, if they can get, go to foreclosure counseling and figure out a way out of the problem. It buys time to be able to find solutions that right now we won't have, and in the meantime, all those houses will be foreclosed. Most of them will sit vacant. People's lives will be dramatically disrupted.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
One more question. Is there a sunset on this? How long is this law enacted for?
Madam
Chair.
Senator
Anderson.
That's a very good question, and that's been raised. And I actually talked to counsel about this over the weekend. Our hardworking counsel here was drafting this amendment yesterday. Thank you very much, Mr. Stang, along with Mr. Cox, who helped with that process. And I asked him to put a sunset into it because we wanted to be 100% clear that this is intended to be a one-year temporary fix. This is not intended to be a permanent law in Minnesota because it is really an extraordinary approach. Mr. Stang's judgment was that there's already, in essence, a sunset in the bill because it says it has dates in place. It says, let's see, where's that definition?
Page 1, if you look at the line 17.
Thank you. Maybe Mr. Stang could explain that better than I could.
Mr. Stang.
Madam Chair, members, I think, in effect, the bill sunsets itself because the deferment period provided for in the bill starts the day after enactment. It ends 1 year from enactment. So under the bill, the deferral period ends 1 year after this is signed by the governor.
And, Madam Chair, I mean, if it would give more comfort, we could strike the whole thing from the statute books, if that would be even more clear. But I think it's very clear the bill, the law would not be effective after 1 year.
Senator Prettner-Solon, that's fine.
I'm sorry, I continue to have more questions. So let's say that somebody gets into a situation 1 month before the end of the bill. Can they still go into a year's deferral on that, or do they only have 1 month to defer the foreclosure?
If Senator Anderson.
I mean, if you're in that universe where you got your mortgage between the dates of the bill, January 1st, 2001 and August 1st, 2007, I think, then any time between the effective, let's see, we extended it. It doesn't start immediately upon enactment. It's, what, 10 days, 20 days?
Seven. I think you made it 7 days
seven
in
days.
The amendment, which we haven't adopted yet, but I...
Yeah. So as soon as it becomes effective, so say the governor signs the bill, 7 days later is when anyone could then file an affidavit asking for deferral, and you would have the right to do that for 1 year. So if you went into default any time during that year, you could request deferral, and it would be for a year.
On the same question...
I don't think that's correct.
No. Yeah.
Sorry,
no.
Did I say it wrong?
Yeah.
Perhaps Professor Cox could clarify. Yeah. You seem to want to say something.
Well,
there.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, yeah. I think the answer to your question is they would only have a month. You don't get a year deferral if you file your deferral in the middle of the period. When the period ends, that's when the deferrals end. I believe that was your question, Senator.
Yes.
I'm sorry,
and Madam
Senator.
Chair, no.
Senator Anderson.
I appreciate that correction because I didn't understand that. And so, really, it's a period of time, and once the period is up, no more. Okay. That's a good clarification. Thank you.
Okay. And I think that the rationale is that we think that federal government will act between now and a year from what, you know, in the next few weeks, perhaps. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize, too. I heard the first part of this presentation last week, and then I had to go to another committee, so I didn't hear the part from the bankers. But one question that I asked that I thought was important is the fact that it isn't that the banks will just lose this money. It will still be built. The interest they would have owed or the amount they would have had to pay would be built into the loan so that they would still, if they were to refinance or sell, they would still owe that money. And that was my understanding, so that, you know, if that isn't the case after the bankers spoke, I'd appreciate that clarification because that makes a difference in how I would look at this, too, is if there's kind of breathing space, but not an expectation that someone else is going to have to pay for this person's mistake in the absence of some kind of bad faith or misconduct.
That's my understanding as well, Senator Olson. I don't know, Professor.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson.
That's an issue that we discussed, and we have language again in this amendment that
let's
will
put the amendment
make
before
that clear
us.
That this does
Senator
not.
Senator Marty moves. It's going to be the A2 amendment, I believe.
So, Madam Chair, I guess my wish would be if we could have Professor Cox go through it carefully and explain all the changes that it does. He can do it better than I can.
Yes.
And then I think that will answer Senator Olson's question. But if not, we can come back to that.
Professor.
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Anderson. After the last testimony, we attempted to directly address and clarify, or in many cases just provide reassurance as to many of the issues that were raised last time, and I hope that we've addressed all of them that were raised. The first lines 1-3 through 1-5. I'm sorry, if I could back up, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, could we talk about getting rid of this language here?
Madam Chair,
yes, Senator Anderson.
There is an error that needs to be deleted from the amendment that it just isn't logically, it doesn't work logically, and that's on line 1.8. So I'd just like to delete a couple of lines before we go into the amendment, if I could.
Certainly. Can you describe that?
Line 1.8 after the comma, delete all everything after the comma, or delete the comma and everything after it. And also line 1.9, delete.
So
delete that whole phrase.
Senator Anderson, are you leaving 1.9, or are you deleting
1.9.
All of that as well?
And then,
so there will be a period at the end of deferment. I mean,
yes.
Fine.
And then on line 1.16, delete the language, or my loan is less than 6 months old. So I'd like that to be incorporated into the amendment if I could.
Yes, that will be.
Thank you.
And now, Professor Cox.
Madam Chair, thank you. Lines 1 through 5 are just clarifying. House Research thought it was ambiguous, and we've clarified that. It's not meant to make any substantive change.
Right.
1-6 through 1-8 addresses a concern that was raised that investors who are not eligible for the deferment would move into the property in order to gain the deferment. It puts a requirement of 6-month prior residency prior to the date of the affidavit of deferment on there. So you had to have proved you lived in the home for 6 months. A later amendment in lines 131 and 132, and then more particularly on 2.2 through 2.4, makes it clear that the borrower has to remain as a resident of the home during the entire deferral period. A concern was raised that people would move out. I didn't think that was actually very likely, but we addressed that concern as well. On lines 110 through 112, a concern was raised that a borrower could file repeated affidavits of deferment, and we simply clarified that you only have one shot. You can file an affidavit of deferment if it's denied, and again, to emphasize from before, lenders have control over everything but whether, you know, over almost all the conditions. Lenders can simply deny the affidavit of deferral, and it's up to the borrower then to go to court to enforce it. So the lenders have that control to just deny it. And if they deny it, the borrower can go to court, but they can't just keep filing affidavits. If they file an affidavit and it's denied, or if they file an affidavit, get a deferment, and then don't miss a payment. You miss one payment, you lose the deferment. If you miss a payment and lose the deferment, you can't go back and get another one. This is a one-shot deal. Again, this is a shared responsibility about how this happens. The one lines 115 and 116 simply dovetail with the requirement that they be there six months prior.
That language is language that goes in the affidavit that the borrower has to write, correct?
That's
yes.
correct.
Yes.
And that's simply putting in so the borrower acknowledges in the affidavit that I've been there 6 months prior to filing this affidavit. There were concerns raised about that there were it was too easy for the borrowers to serve the affidavit. So we've, again, tried to address those concerns.
Too difficult, perhaps you mean.
Actually, too easy. The lenders thought
I see what you're saying.
You know, they could file it too many places, and the lender might not find it in time. So we've, again, shifted more burdens onto the borrowers here and said you can only deliver it to the foreclosing counsel for the lender or when the lender has to send a notice out that says you have a notice of this right to deferment, they have to put an address in that notice where they'll accept the affidavit of deferment. So you can give it to that address, or if that address is different than the foreclosing counsel, you can give it to the foreclosing counsel, which is in the notice of foreclosure. So we've tightened that up so that the affidavits won't go to places where lenders will have a hard time finding it. And, you know, I understood that concern. They might send it to their mortgage broker or something, and so we're just saying, you know, limiting the places that can be served.
Well, and I think it makes sense as well, Professor, because it's my understanding that there is a handful, if you will, of law firms in the Twin Cities who are handling these foreclosures for lenders who are not here. And it's real difficult for people to find those lenders at this point. And so this makes sure that it gets the information gets to an appropriate party who then can act accordingly. But otherwise it might be, you know, weeks, I suppose, before you could actually nail down where the lender actually is and who can represent them. So this I think takes care of that.
Madam Chair, I think it does. We'll call this the Make Larry Wilford's Life Easier Amendment. The lines 129 and 130 extend from 5 days to 10 days, the time period in which the lender has to accept or reject the affidavit. To clarify on this, all the lender really has to do is determine whether it meets the definition of subprime. It's a mathematical calculation. But it gives the lender up to 10 days to do that rather than 5 because there was concerns that wasn't enough time. To skip ahead on the time periods, we've also extended, as the chair has indicated, extended the effective day 7 days. So that means that, you know, the lenders will have 10 days to provide the first notices, and that only goes to the small group of people that have a foreclosure sale within 20 days of the effective date of the law. And then we'll have 3 weeks to provide further notices to people in foreclosure. Again, there just was a sense that that was too tight a timeline, understandable. We've simply extended that. We have also extended on 2-6 from 5 to 10 days the right to deny the affidavit. So we've provided all the notice periods. We've increased the amount of time. On lines 131 through 136, there was some ambiguity about what was meant by a monthly payment, and we've clarified that it's principal and interest.
So, Madam Chair, I mean, in essence, if the borrower is responsible for making those payments, the borrower still obviously, you know, whatever their responsibility is remains, and so that may be added on to this monthly payment that they have to make unless they can negotiate something with the lender.
Yeah, Senator Anderson, I think that I don't know that we need language, but I think we want to know, have that understanding that if they were escrowing for taxes and insurance, that would continue and that they in any case would be responsible for making those payments. Is that your intention?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate at this time, I'd move the A2 amendment.
It is.
There's a couple more.
There's a couple more pieces on the back, so we'll let Professor Cox explain that, and then I'll take that motion.
And then lines 2-9 through 2-13 are, again, addressing concerns that were raised. One concern was that was the question I think Senator Prettner-Solon raised about – oh, no, Senator Olson raised about whether obligations under the contract were discharged in any way. So the first sentence of that new subdivision 3 just clarifies that, no, this is not meant to alter any obligations under the contract. The second sentence addresses the concerns raised by Kevin Dunleavy's testimony that it would cause concerns with future purchases. The rights here end with the foreclosure sale. And what this provision says in lines 211 through 213 is that you have a bona fide purchaser of any interest in the real estate, that person does not take subject to any claims under this act. So that should clarify that there's no problems with title for any bona fide purchaser. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
And Madam Chair, just to clarify that, Senator Olson, I mean, the intent is to say that if there's obligations between the lender and the borrower, if the borrower wants to argue that the lender didn't meet their requirements under this law, they can argue that in court, but it's not intended at all to affect the title of the property, that those obligations would not render the foreclosure invalid. So it's really makes clear that whatever the financial responsibility of the borrower is remains.
Okay, Senator Prettner-Solin then moves adoption of the A2 amendment that's just been explained, as modified, incorporating the changes that Senator Anderson made when we began discussion of it. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, in the requirements for the borrower, you require them to live in the home for at least the next 12 months. But the way I understand the rest of it is that if I don't apply for a deferment until 10 months from now, I only get 2 months of deferment. And if I, at the end of the 2 months, I may not have the right to live in the house longer. Is that the way you intend it? I mean, I suppose it's a moot point if these are truly residents and if the deferral is enough to keep them above board, well, they intended to live there at least 12 months anyhow.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly intend the residing requirement to run along with the deferment period.
Although I would think that when after the sheriff's sale, they would still be able to continue to live there if it were to follow the six-month redemption period. Is that, I mean, then we would just go back to our mortgage foreclosure law if they didn't, weren't able to fulfill the requirement there. Is that your understanding, Professor Cox?
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, if you look at line 3132, the affidavit of deferment simply says that they will stay till the end of the deferment period. So it doesn't say 1 year. It says I intend to stay till the end of the deferment. And then at the end of that, into the deferment period, if there's no resolution, no congressional federal solution that they can take advantage of or other way to work this thing out, then they get the foreclosure sale in the 6 months on top of that, Madam Chair.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, Mr. Cox, somewhere, maybe it's the top of, maybe we've changed the language, but line 6.3, you're telling the person they have to intend to live in the home at least the next 12 months. And I'm not sure. Unless you want
I think you're right.
Anderson.
I think you're right, Senator Marty. Madam Chair, that may be a conflict with our intention.
Looks like you've made a good point, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair,
to the end of the deferral period.
Yes, exactly.
So
that is
instead of, I think online, Mr. Stain, do you want to read it? But I think I see it.
Madam Chair, I think 6.3 is strike everything after home and insert until the end of the deferment period.
Madam Chair.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you.
6.6.
Does the word intend leave them some wiggle room, or should it say must?
They die.
You'd lose the deferment if you weren't.
Professor Cox or Senator Anderson?
Madam Chair, this is in the notice that they get, and it says right now you have to live there, and you must, well, I guess it's the same, yes, and you must intend to live there for the next 12 months. You could say you must live there for the next 12 months. Either one.
I think the must think kind of begs the question, though, of, you know, if something happens to the home or something happens to you.
That's the intent.
So
you lose the deferment.
I like must when it comes to live. I like that. But what we have to qualify, you must currently live at the home in foreclosure and intend to live at the home until the end of the deferment period. And I wonder if that's important to incorporate on the affidavit or not. It sounds like it might be.
Madam Chair, if you look at line 3.1, if you look at line 3.1.3.2, the affidavit is correct. Senator Marty pointed out an error in the notice.
Okay, there we go. Yes, thank you. Senator Olson, on the amendment?
No.
Senator Marty, do you want to move that amendment? Members understand it's on 6.3. Any further discussion of that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Then, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I keep going back to my pointer and thinking about what happens to this money that's been, for example, to put it in really concrete terms, let's just say your payment was $3,000 a month. And under the terms of this law, your payment becomes $2,000 a month for a year. And so at the end of that 12 months, let's just say your loan is not going to be foreclosed and you're going to go forward, you know, back to the old terms of the loan, but you haven't been able to renegotiate a loan, and let's just say the federal government hasn't stepped in and superseded things in a way that would impact this. Then I'm assuming there's a $12,000, at that point there would be a $12,000 shortfall that would have to be paid.
In addition to interest on that $12,000.
Well, I don't know. I'm not quite sure. It doesn't say that you'd compound interest on the – I'm assuming that would be interest. But somehow, I think we need to make it clear to both the lenders and the borrowers that this money isn't just going away, you know, that they would actually owe that money in a lump sum if they would at the end of that period, or whether it would be built in and amortized out over the length of the loan. I'm not sure what the intent is. But I think that there's a warning there, because I'm afraid that people might just think that somehow they can delay their payment and they're not going to owe this money, and not realize that it's going to hit them like a big bang at the end of that 12 months, potentially. So, you know, I guess I'm just thinking there should be something in this notice or some clear direction to both parties about how that gets handled.
Senator Anderson or Professor Cox?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, let's separate the lenders from the borrowers. As to the lenders, that was the intent of lines 2.9 through 2.10 on the amendment. The lenders can now be assured, which I think was implicit otherwise, that no contractual obligations have been discharged. The bigger question you raise is as to the borrowers. And I think one thing you have to realize here is what is the group that we're talking about. We're talking about people who are already in foreclosure. They're already looking at losing their house. And in this situation, fewer and fewer of those people will have substantial equity in their homes. I think that what we can do, that's just an important background for this. So, yes, that money will be owed, but they already can't make their payment. That's why they're in foreclosure. They already are threatened with the situation of losing their house. My experience dealing with a lot of those borrowers is they're real focused on right now and trying to just keep their lives together. The point of this bill is that the environment will look different a year after it's passed. In fact, there was an article in yesterday's New York Times about Barney Frank working with certain elements in the industry and the Federal Reserve Board and working with Senator Dodd on trying to come up with this bankruptcy reform and reform of the FHA so that the FHA can make loans to buy these things out. People will take haircuts. So the fundamental principle of this bill is that in a year there will be a federal solution to this crisis that forces resolutions that deal with this entire problem of people being underwater. And last point, I think that we can put a notice in this system after the hearing to borrowers so that borrowers are clear and not under the misperception, as best we can do it, that they're not getting any discharge from this. They're paying less, but they're just buying time to work it out. So we can put in a notice that nothing in this, for instance, when the notice of acknowledgement of the affidavit of deferral being accepted, we can put something in there that says nothing in this deferral is discharging any of your obligations. At the end of the period, you're going to go owe all the money. We could even say we encourage you, if possible, to make your full payment and not just the payment that's required here to prevent foreclosure from occurring.
So it seems what we're saying here, if we pass this, it's not really complementing the other foreclosure legislation that we've passed, because that was to try to help people to avoid foreclosure. This is literally deferring it in hoping that there will be some federal action that will give some folks an opportunity to stay and to keep their home and avoid foreclosure at the end. Senator Anderson,
well,
is
Madam
that correct?
Well, Madam Chair, I agree with what Professor Cox said, that I think people are, at a minimum, they'll be no worse off a year from now than they are now. They will have had a home for a year. They will have had an opportunity, perhaps, to change things in their lives, to be able to find a way out, if there is one. But I also agree we need to be very, very clear to these homeowners what they're getting into, so there's no false hope there. So I agree with Mr. Cox. We need to put something in there that makes that very clear. But in terms of, you know, what the year deferment, you know, I think there are some of the, you know better than I do what some of the other bills are that you're talking about, but I think we've heard over and over about people who are in denial. You know, they're getting these notices. They're, you know, they know they're going to lose their home soon. They're just kind of freaked out, and they stop listening. And I don't know whether we'll be able to reach them or not. I hope so. But having an opportunity where there's a little more time where they can connect up with foreclosure counselors, homeownership counselors, you know, credit repair folks, community folks who can maybe help them figure out how to pay their medical bill or whatever it is that they need help with. I mean, that time does give them an opportunity to make use of some of those other good steps. And I guess I thought I heard you say that this wouldn't relate to that, but I think potentially it could.
Senator Anderson, you're right, and I didn't use the right terminology, but the focus isn't necessarily in trying to help people work out foreclosure process. We're assuming that most of these people will end up being foreclosed upon. On the other hand, it defers. They'll even have more time to sell the home. I mean, and hope that the market, you know, changes for that as well. So they'll just have a longer time to do the things that we have enacted in the other legislation.
Yes.
And so in that sense, it does complement it. So I apologize for my Monday morning lapse. That's what I'm going to put it off to. Is there any other discussion? You know, Senator Anderson, and you and I have talked, I'm supporting the bill because I think that, as you and I have both been saying, these are extraordinary times. I mean, we have a crisis, and it certainly is individuals and families, but not. It's more than that. It's neighborhoods and communities across our state that are feeling the impact of this crisis. And so I think that whatever we can do to help people, is in this case buy time, and maybe the marketplace turns around, maybe people have an opportunity to work things out with their lender. I know that there are lenders who are actively trying to work things out, particularly our Minnesota-based companies. I mean, our banks are working. At least I've had evidence, you know, told to me, and I'm not going to talk about individual banks here, but that many of them they don't want to own real estate. It's absolutely true. In the real estate world, I think those properties are quickly become what we used to call alligators. You just keep pouring money, and they just keep taking money, just keep feeding them, and it has a negative impact, obviously, on those lenders who are holding those properties. Certainly has a negative impact on neighborhoods. I think we all have homes in our neighborhoods that have been on the market for over a year, and people have taken the signs down. The houses are still empty, and there's all sorts of issues that go along with that. So I would like to see a little more definition of subprime, and it might sound like a strange thing to say since we passed our anti-predatory lending statute last year, but I think we do want to narrow this to those people who got into really bad loans from the get-go, the people who were victims of a scam and of negative amortization, certainly, but also other kinds of frauds that were, you know, perpetrated on them, or lack of understanding, no doc, false stated income, that kind of thing, those kinds of loans that we talked about a year ago. I'd like to see that narrowed some, but otherwise I think, and I think you're going to go to judiciary, am I correct?
Madam Chair, you're absolutely right, and obviously it's deadline week, so we'd really appreciate it if the committee could move the bill out today, and I will continue to work with all the lending community to see if we can find any of those solutions that will work better for everybody involved.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm going to vote in favor of this, too, but I just have to say, to me, it's a really close call. Because I think about the fact that you're going to have this additional money accruing so that unless the value of the home grows quite dramatically, it's going to be harder and harder to get that money back out to, you know, because you're kind of going a little further into the hole every month when you're not making payments and you're still going to owe this money. And so there may be some extraordinary situations where someone, as you said, has a medical bill, or maybe they can find a seller for the house. But in many cases, and then, of course, the federal government, it's hard to say what they may do. So they may do something that will help to take some pressure off. But right now, as you said, because this is such an extraordinary time, it's kind of like you're sticking your finger in the dike a little bit and trying to prevent quite as much of a flood and hoping that things will even out a little bit. And so to that extent, I think that, you know, that the benefits outweigh that concern I have. But I also agree with Senator Scheid. I'd prefer the bill if you didn't have situations like where people have taken cash out on loans or maybe had a second or third or fourth mortgage to pay off some other property where really they were taking advantage of the system too. And in those situations, I'm not sure if they should be as entitled to this second chance. I guess that's kind of how I feel about it, that I'd like to limit it a little more too.
So Senator Anderson, I know, is listening, and I'm going to ask is there a motion? Senator Marty?
Bill.
Senator Marty will move that Senate File 3396 as amended, and we've been working off a committee engrossment so members know what language we're discussing here. Senate File 3396 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Is any further discussion here? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to say something that hasn't been said? Mr. Johnson, if you want to certainly do come on up and share it with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Steve Johnson with the Minnesota Bankers Association, Director of Government Relations. The MBA represents about 95% of the banks in Minnesota, large and small. So I'll be very brief, and I apologize if I do get a little repetitive, but there's a lot of stuff here to digest. This is a pretty heavy piece of legislation that you're looking at. So I said some of this at the last hearing, but I just want to restate it because I have a couple more facts to it, to the best I understand them. You know, banks are helping people already. You know, bankers are individually helping folks every day. I mean, our job is to have a long-term relationship with our customer. So we wouldn't go into the foreclosure process lightly. It's the last resort of last resorts because we want to have a long-term relationship with them. We are working with the Home Ownership Center, the MBA is, and they are counseling with people, they are helping people. And also, more importantly, the Hope Now Alliance, and I've talked about that last week, and I gave some numbers. Actually, they came up with some more data. They've helped over 1 million people in the last 6 months or so with their mortgages. The Hope Now Alliance is a national alliance of counselors, bankers, servicers, everyone in the industry working together to help people with their mortgages. And they've helped over 1 million people. And in Minnesota, they've helped 2,421 people with loan repayments, with loan modifications, and 3,721 with subprime loan repayments. So just under 6,000. So if you, that's a six-month period. Extrapolate, if you can do some kind of quick math, take that to a year, you might have approximately 12,000 people at a minimum that would be helped without any kind of government participation in helping people with their loans. There's the other Project Lifeline that's going on. The data is not out there again, but it's like six national lenders that are working on this. They're helping with people that are severely delinquent, 90 days or longer. So they, again, will probably help another swath of people. So the point there is that we are helping people already without government intervention. The proponents, and I failed to mention again, I want to applaud Senator Anderson for her hard work on this issue. It's a very important issue. So, and they have been talking with us, and we appreciate that. So I wanted to say that up front. I apologize. The proponents talk about this being a temporary fix. We start talking at the end of the last hearing about the farmer lender mediation thing, and I was just going to say, make the next comment when we had to move on with time, but that was passed by the legislature in 1986 as a temporary fix to a farm crisis in the 80s that we're all familiar with. That law is still on the books. It keeps getting extended every 2 years, now more recently being extended every 4 years. So we get very concerned, and there hasn't been, you could argue maybe from time to time, but right now it'd be hard to argue that there's a farm crisis going on. So when we talk about this being temporary, we get very concerned that with that kind of an example that this will become permanent legislation. So the mortgage industry, the mortgage world is a national industry. It's dealt a lot with in the secondary market. I know a lot of us want to wish for the days when we have the local bank or the local lender have the mortgage in-house and keep it until it's done. It's just not done like that anymore. So we are in a national environment, and folks are watching this legislation, and we think it'll have a chilling impact on credit and the secondary market for mortgages if this kind of thing passes. They will treat loans made in Minnesota differently. They will look at them differently. They will think about them differently. So I think we really need to keep that in mind when we're looking at this legislation. It's not just us saying that. The Star Tribune has had an editorial today in the newspaper, and I think you have a copy at your.
Members do.
Foreclosure remedy shouldn't go too far. Lawmakers should weigh this carefully. Art Wolnick was quoted in the paper last week. Move forward with caution. So it's just not us saying that. There are others out there who are saying the same thing. So I just wanted to point that out. Lastly, and you were chatting about the other pieces of legislation that are going through the process. You know, there's probably up to a dozen pieces of legislation out there right now, and I think some will have a direct impact on this issue. Some of it is directly looking at how to get people into counseling quicker or getting notice to counseling, and I think that's what everybody's talking about here. So I think some of the things that you are working on will have an impact. Those working groups were very effective. They had 30 or 40 interest groups from all across the spectrum meeting, you know, sometimes weekly or even daily in some instances, working on these things, and it came up with a really great legislative package. So this one, you know, it wasn't a part of that. It probably could have used that kind of a vetting. I'm just nervous we're sitting here on deadlines. We're trying to push things through quick. But this one just seems a little bit outside the realm. So we oppose it at this time. So,
Johnson, thank you. And I think we need to listen, you know, long and hard to those words. I think on principle, this isn't my favorite thing to do as well. But I think what Senator Anderson is trying to do is buy some time for folks and think that, because I do think that we'll see something coming from the federal government. And Mr. Johnson.
I'll take that promotion, Madam Chair.
No, Mr. Johnson. Trust me, you won't. Mr. Johnson.
I'm sorry. One last thing I mentioned about the timing issue, and I have a handout if folks would like to see it. It's kind of our estimate of the foreclosure process in Minnesota. We have a very long consumer-friendly foreclosure process already in Minnesota. We have a six-month redemption period. But that doesn't start immediately. We have there are several months, depending on the lender, before that redemption, before the sheriff's sale, before the redemption period kicks into place. The chart I'm handing out talks about a 14-month process. So you can see, you know, that's an estimate of, you know, talking to certain lenders. But the bottom line is probably at a minimum 9-10 months to as high as 14 months, or if the lender wants to work with somebody, even longer. So there, from our research, 22 states that do not have a redemption period at all. So in a state that doesn't have a redemption period, you might be looking at buying time in essence, sort of like this legislation does. But in Minnesota, we, again, have a long time frame for foreclosures. With that tied to all the things going on in the marketplace, work things out, we don't think this legislation is necessary. So thank you for letting me
Mr. Johnson, thank you. Good morning, Mr. Skillbred.
Madam Chair, David Skillbred, Vice President of Government Relations for the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. You've had a lot of discussion on this, and I'll just pick up where Mr. Johnson left off, and that's with the principle of the bill. I want to thank Senator Anderson for the amendments today, and we had a nice long conversation yesterday about this bill, and I appreciate her openness and her concerns and willingness to talk about this. I think, despite the good work and the A2 amendment that was done today, the principle involved here of a deferment on top of a foreclosure process for Minnesota, which is already long, I think it remains to be the troubling issue for us. Since this bill is prospective, if something happens in Congress this spring, everyone in Minnesota who would find themselves in the position of going into foreclosure will have time under our current laws to take advantage of whatever Congress might choose to do. So I think that when you really start to look at things like this chart that Steve just handed out, and when you begin to think in your mind about, okay, if there's a 9-month process or 10-month, and if that is preceded by lenders who are always willing to talk to the borrower and try to work something out, so that in actuality that process is really extended much longer than that, I think what you need to conclude is that borrowers who face this situation will have the time under the current law to work something out with their lender and take advantage of something that might occur at the federal level. My bankers' national convention just met recently, and some of them talked about this bill. And again, a news story came up where a lender in southern Minnesota faced a situation of a foreclosure with a good customer. It was not a subprime loan. It was a job loss. And that lender, because of his great respect for the contract, actually gave personal money to the borrowers so that they could keep up the deal and keep the terms of the contract whole in order to give that person a little more room to grow. So they did not shave the principal, but instead he gave money out of his personal pocket to get them into a position that he thought would be successful for them. Again, that was without any new law and under the terms of the current process. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for your time.
Mr. Skillbred, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else that wanted to say something, Mr. Martin? Good morning.
Good morning. Senator.
Madam Chair, my name is Pat Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Mortgage Association. And we were very happy to have supported the predatory lending language and legislation that passed in 2007. And we feel that we've been a fairly active member of the foreclosure study groups that operated during the summer. And we support most of those bills in total as they come forward. This is the only bill that we probably don't support at this time. And the reason for that is something that should give us pause. The reason is that as the national credit markets tighten, these are tightening in all sorts of lending arenas, automobile loans, student loans, and all of that, we are very, very nervous about the potential impact of national lenders' view of Minnesota as we face the mountain of arms that will be resetting this year. And that's what makes us nervous about this bill, because national lenders that sit and make decisions in other locations may feel that there's a stutter step in Minnesota and that perhaps capital won't flow as easily here. Now, I know that you've heard this argument before, but it doesn't make it any less true. I use the example that your mother always told you not to run with a sharp stick in your hand, and just about always, nothing bad happened, but the consequence was still grave. And I think that that is why I have to make this argument on this bill, and I hope that the suggestions from Senator Olson and Chair, especially on the definition of subprime, because I'll remind people that the subprime definition would actually trigger loans in some cases at about 6.8 to be swept up in this definition. And I would suggest that that's not probably the market that you're trying to get after. I also very much like the idea of the suggestion that when there was fraud involved in the loans, yes, absolutely. But absent that, I think that we have to take a very hard look at the impact that the legislation will have on the attitude of national money suppliers to Minnesota in an already restricted market. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Martin or Senator Anderson, are we the only state that's looking at legislation similar to this, other than what the federal government is doing? Because I'd be surprised if that's the case. I just wonder if anyone knows if there aren't other state legislators that are contemplating similar action.
I think Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not aware, maybe Mr. Cox is, but I do believe that if we pass this legislation, even if we don't, you know, even if it, whatever, just the discussion in Minnesota, I expect other states would take a close look at this, and I would expect other states might follow. I mean, obviously that won't give comfort to the lending community, but it indicates people around the country are looking at this problem. When you have Ben Bernanke saying you have to, you know, urging banks to renegotiate loans and saying, move, we need action, I think at the local level, there's going to be more things happening. Do you have more information?
Professor Cox.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson. In last week's New York Times, there's a discussion of a bill that's been pending in the New York legislature that's picking up steam for a one-year deferment. I've had actually just the talk of this. I've had three legislators from other states call and want copies of this bill and intend to introduce it in their states. The problem before the New York legislation is like a total one-year deferment on all loans that are owner-occupied. This bill is a little different because it's so much more targeted. It's so much more limited. It requires action by the borrower and payments during the deferral period. And so I think that concept wasn't out there before, and there's a lot of interest in that.
Yeah, Senator Anderson, I think what Mr. Martin is saying is really important. I remember back in 77 or 78 when the legislature lifted usury requirements on mortgages. I remember as a freshman member of the other body thinking, well, gee, we're just going to have higher interest rates if we do that. And one of my colleagues pointed out, yeah, but people who have money will be able to afford, they'll be able to get loans because the source of loans was drying up and there wasn't money. And then after I left the house at that time, I was a real estate salesperson and I sold homes at 17.5% interest. It was kind of a baptism by fire. I went into the market in 79, 80. And, of course, home prices were a lot different as well. But that was quite a shock. And so what we do here does have an impact. I think, though, that what Professor Cox says is that there's going to be, if there isn't going to be something at the federal level, which I think there will be, there's certainly, it's going to be around the country. And because we, this is a crisis. There is no question. If you live in Senator Higgins' neighborhood, for example, or even some of the neighborhoods that I represent, you know it's a crisis. So I think we would entertain a motion. We did already have a motion by Senator Marty. Is there anybody else that wanted to speak? Yes, Mr. Lemke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Matthew Lemke. I'm with the law firm of Winthrop & Weinstein, and I don't want to be repetitive of a lot of the testimony that was already here. I just want to be on the record. I'm here on behalf of the National Mortgage Bankers Association, and we would echo a lot of the concerns that Mr. Johnson, Mr. Martin, Mr. Skilbrett just brought up, especially the effect that this could have on the marketplace and the message that this bill is sending. So it's more of a we appreciate taking care of a lot of the technical issues that it looks like the A2 amendment does, but we still have those fundamental issues on principle of what the bill is we think is going to do to the marketplace or the signal it's going to send. Thank you. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lemke. Yes, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious, what effect will the national attitude have on the marketplace of Minnesota? I'm not quite clear on that.
Mr. Lemke.
Madam Chair, Senator, I don't think anybody knows exactly what that would be. I don't want to give you an answer and say if this bill passes, this is what's going to happen. There's probably others more qualified that could answer that question. But just the feedback I'm getting back from the members of the National Bankers Association is that they will look at Minnesota borrowers differently if something like this goes forward.
I think that the answer probably is that they won't provide the funding for the mortgages that are made. I mean, that would be the worst.
That's the concern.
That the money would not be available to provide the mortgage. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I guess what we're talking about here is a small group of people who have been facing foreclosure, and I think most of the borrowers in Minnesota, like myself, pay their bills on time and are able to weather this storm of higher interest rates and property taxes, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, you know, anybody looking at credit and obviously someone going into a foreclosure, their credit's going to be in trouble anyway. I think what we're providing here is just a temporary solution to give people some time. I appreciate Mr. Johnson's testimony that they've been able to help nearly, you know, 12,000 people, perhaps that leaves another 20,000 people, perhaps with some real trouble with their ability to live in their house. So I think I hear a lot of fear, but I don't see the reality of that fear coming to truth. So I haven't been quite convinced. I think this is a good bill. I appreciate the work that Senator Anderson has done to address the four or five concerns that were brought up last Friday, and I think that we should move forward with this bill.
And Senator Anderson, I'd like to see that when we get to Judiciary Committee, maybe we can better define. I think you're looking for people who were victims of predatory loans. I think we should be more clear about that in the language. But having said that, you know, I think that you're doing something that needs to be done. So is there anybody else that would like to speak? On Senator Marty's motion, then, excuse me, that Senate File 3396, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill has been recommended to pass and re-referred to Judiciary.
Very much.
Thank you,
Madam Chair,
and now,
committee members.
Before members of the committee stand up and I'm sorry, Senator Marty.
Oh.
No, I just want to tell you that we meet tomorrow at our regular time, 12:30, and we will have a bill of the chairs on life settlements and a bill from Senator Marty on mental health coverage. And then we're meeting again tomorrow night at 6. We will hear. I'm going to ask Mr. Stang to read that. I'm sorry.
Tomorrow at 6, Senator Scoia has a school a health insurance pool bill. Senator Higgins and Pappas have payday lending bills. And Senator Scheid has the Commerce Department's omnibus market assurance bill.
And with that, members, the meeting's adjourned.